You're listening to a Squabble Box podcast.
Hi, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of the Attack of the B-Movies podcast version 2.0. me, Johnny, and my good friend and cohort,
James.
For tonight's film, James picked one. Let's see, how do I put this? Well, at the time, Vincent Canby from the New York Times felt the film was a nasty, dimly executed exploitation movie about a psychopathic fellow who roams around Los Angeles strangling women with stockings and then mutilating their bodies. He also says the performances are terrible, as are the writing and direction. Let's see, Paul Taylor in Time Out magazine called it a routinely mindless sickie, and it didn't get better reviews as time went on. So all that makes it perfect for our show.
Yes, I agree.
I knew you did. The film is the 1979, well, it says 1980 release date, but I've read 79 in places.
It looks like it was filmed in the late 70s.
Oh, no, it definitely was.
You know.
The 1980 psychological horror film, co-written and directed by Robert Hammer. So technically a Hammer film, but not
really. Yes.
It was also seized and confiscated in the UK under Section 3 of the Obscene Publications Act of 1959.
I don't know if it's considered a video nasty, but...
It was.
Okay.
Well, it said during the video nasty period.
Okay.
I don't see how it couldn't have been. The film is about the film is Don't Answer the Phone.
Make sure you don't make a collect call or somebody doesn't call you collect or you get charged, right? That's my...
Are there still payphones anywhere?
I don't think so.
There's got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine there's none.
Yeah.
Are there any free roaming cows?
Probably.
Are there, or are they all accounted for in
farms? Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can use like a burner phone. Maybe, but
it's the same thing with the cows. My buddy asked me a question once. I go, that's a really good question. Turns out there are no wild cows. You'll figure, unless they escape. So anyways, movies Don't Answer the Phone. It's directed by Robert Hammer, written by Michael D. Castle and Robert Hammer, produced by the same two. Stars Denise Gellick, Nicholas Wirth, James Westmoreland. Nicholas Wirth.
I've seen him in Dark Man.
Yeah, I know who. I mixed up with somebody else for a second. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Music by Byron Allred. I swear to God, I know that name. I don't think I do. It maybe sounds like another name. No, I mean, because I'm looking at it and it looks and sounds familiar, but then I can't find anything with them. The movie stars
Nicholas Wirth.
Yes, Nicholas Wirth plays Kirk Smith, an ex-Vietnam vet, because it was the late 70s. Okay. He's an amateur bodybuilder. He's a Vietnam vet and a talented porno photographer.
I don't know how talented you have to be to photograph porn, but fair enough.
And he lives in good old L.A., James' stomping ground.
Actually, I'm about 2 hours away, but...
Close enough. Closer to him. He likes picking up young women. He likes strangling them till they're dead and then sexually abusing their dead bodies.
Yes, he's very...
He's a romantic.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
He's clearly a romantic. This came out of the time period when a lot of movies came out featuring ex-Vietnam vets that were mentally unstable.
I think Rolling Thunder, yeah, it came out a few years before, which...
Well, because right around this time, Rambo wasn't too far after this, and he was a Vietnam vet. And there were a good amount of movies using that trope, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it really gave all Vietnam vets a bad name, because, I mean, not all of them came back psychologically, like, that bad.
True.
I mean, they all saw some, a lot of them saw some bad stuff, and, you know, but it really, that genre of movie using that really pigeonholed the veterans and probably didn't help with the public's view of them either.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, man. Let's hear it.
Well,
I explained good old. Don't forget about the nice muscles posing he does with the crucifix.
Yeah, so.
The opening shot of the film.
Yeah, so there's a frame between his flexing his muscle in a pose. He does this a few times in the movie. He flexes his muscles, you know, he pumps iron.
Right.
And there's a large crucifix there for some reason. They never really established the religious aspect, which I kind of wish they did. But what can you do?
Yeah, it would have been more effective, the flexing, if he didn't look like Bela Lugosi.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
He was a big dude.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say he was ripped. He was a big dude.
Yeah. Which is probably why he got so many roles. I mean, but anyway, between the murders, you know, like I was saying, there's these religious, twisted religious ceremonies. So we do see some sort of, see some crucifixes, right? But at the same time, I kind of wish they did more with it, because usually with religious element, that's more like, or with supernatural horror, you have that sort of religious aspect,
yeah,
or vice versa. But here, you don't really, they have it, but they don't really. You know, it's not really, there's no supernatural element to it, but at the same time, it's like, I kind of wish I did more with it, because I feel like it gives some, there's a little bit more going on in the movie for that.
It would have given it some depth.
Yeah.
It would have probably helped turn it from a mindless slasher flick to, well, I guess, is it really a slasher flick though? I mean, I guess. It would have given a lot more depth to the story and the character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was based on a book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how well of a job they did, because I never read the book.
Yeah,
I think if they built on that and been like, well, okay, you know, he's conflicted. Or if he'd even visited the church and confessed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something to show it. Because, well, go ahead. Continue.
So, and we did kind of touch on the psychological, you know, disturbed Vietnam vet aspect. So he does have these imaginary conversations with his dead father. So he does make some racist remarks. I remember that there's some profanity in there, but yeah, whatever. I'm sure I don't think anyone listening has virgin ears, so they'll be okay with it.
If you watch the movies that are on this show, yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. So, you know, he weeps like a baby. There's a lot of this weird psychological stuff, which, you know, and Nicholas Worth does ham it up, which I like that. You know, the acting is kind of entertaining, over the top at times, especially with Worth, not so much the other characters. But, you know, at some point, Kirk goes into town or into the city or whatever, and he makes a phone call. And this is kind of funny too, where he calls Lindsay Gale. She's a psychologist on her radio show, and he has a Spanish accent, right?
Yep.
Which is really which I thought was kind of entertaining, and harassing her, telling her, you know, he's having headaches, blackouts, things of that nature. He does follow one of Dr. Gale's female patients home for a therapy session. He tortures her to death, essentially, right? So he uses his, he strangles them. I think the alternate title is The Hollywood Strangler, but he strangles his victims with a stocking. There's a coin in them, which I think that is just, I don't know how to word it, but it's just, like, if you're having some pressing in your throat, right, you can't really breathe. So that's why he has that coin in there. So we do see some of those. That's basically how he goes about killing the victims with this talk. There's not a lot of gore in this movie, which, I can take or leave that. And at some point, he gets to the prostitute, right? He murders the prostitute while on the phone to Dr. Gale's show. And so Dr. Gale, she has to listen to him cry. She's really disturbed, right? She's like, oh, I think we got the guy, right? Prior to that, there had only been reports of murders, but nobody knew who was committing them, right? But they were piling up, right? And the police were sort of following the trail of the killer, right, before that. Yeah, so that is just one of the more, I remember that a good bit. Well, I don't know, a good bit, but I remember it. And so We meet detectives Hatcher and McCabe, and they're charged. These guys, yeah, they are goofy. So McCabe is James Westmoreland, and Hatcher is Ben Frank, and so they're assigned the task of tracking out a killer, right? So that's what they do, being detectives, right? Working homicide, because people are being killed, right?
Hence homicide.
McCabe first questions Ariel. He's very upfront or very unsympathetic. She's just like, I don't want to be around you. Very strong dislike. McCabe is just very to the point, right? He's like, tell me what's going on so I can get the killer, which, right. You know, he does have that sort of mannerism throughout the movie where he's very brusque. He doesn't always think before he acts. He typically doesn't, in fact. And so, you know, that's just how he is. But later, he prevents one of her patients from committing suicide. I believe that was Sue Ellen. She's about to jump off a roof, and so Gail isn't able to help her. So then McCabe saves her from committing suicide, right? And then Dahiel becomes fond of McCabe, and they develop a brief love affair, which I don't know if I don't think it would happen if a detective were to help a psychologist patient. Maybe it depends on if they get along. But hey, I guess they just felt like they had to have that subplot to, you know, give the characters something to do rather than just chasing around a killer and taking calls over their radio show. So that happens, right? And so there's a point where I think this is before, yeah, because I remember there's a pimp character named Adkins, right? And so I think they have a conversation, but prior to that, Kirk commits a murder and Adkins witnesses it, and so Kirk confronts him and they have a fight, right? And it's, you know, basically, because he doesn't want word getting out that he committed another murder, right? Is what I was able to figure out, right? And so they have a fight, and he breaks a glass bottle over Adkins's head, right? The pimp. This is also a drug dealer, right? So he does show up a little later on. So basically, after that, Hatcher and McCabe, they sort of, since they're in pursuit of the killer, right, they're looking for him. And so they talk, they're going around town asking people, you know, they're looking for Atkins because they know he's the witness of the murder. And so they talk to a bum and he's telling them, hey, give me some money and I'll tell you where Atkins is. And McCabe and Hatcher, you know, reluctant, right? They don't want to feel like they're being ripped off. And so McCabe gives him $5, right? And he's like, hey, I thought you were going to be 10. He's like, nope, just five, man. And so they go to this massage parlor it's called a whorehouse. That's what it is, right? It's a common thing, especially back then, you know, massage parlor, whorehouses masquerading as massage parlors. And so they're looking for the witness for Adkins, right? They want to question him and find out, you know, pinpoint Kirk, right? And so they go in and it doesn't go as planned, right? And so there's I thought they could have been more, you know, I guess subtle about it, right? Not cause quite a commotion, but they do anyway. And so they cause a commotion, and everybody and their brother is running out of the rooms in the whorehouse, right? It's, you know, they're making passing remarks, running around with chickens, like their heads cut off, essentially, right? And I thought it was pretty funny, but in more entertaining scenes, I would say. And so the pimp attacks McCabe and Hatcher, right? I guess because they cause a commotion, right? And so, well, that and he didn't know they were looking for him, right? And so he attacks them, and then they shoot him, right, to death without being able to question him. And I'm thinking, well, if I was a cop, I wouldn't go that far if someone's attacking me. Defend myself, but it's like, I wouldn't shoot the witness. It seems kind of stupid. But hey, what can you do, right? That happens in the film. And then we have another murder going on right after that. Hatcher and McCabe are saying, well, at least they're saying that, oh, they thought they sent out the vice squad, but no, we're homicide, right? And so they're like, oh, we have to fill out reports now, you know, it's like, But then Hatcher tells him, hey, I'm not the one who shot the pimp, right? And so Kirk, there's another scene here. Kirk is in for the scene of his next murder. The victim's landlady. So this is another one of the scenes where he's posing. Well, he's a photographer, but it's also his cover, right? And so that's what he's doing. He's covering up, okay, I'm going to photograph these ladies for my porn dealer. Right. And he shows a portfolio. Well, he does, right? He loses his portfolio after he kills a victim, or then her landlady, and then he loses his portfolio over the scene. And so Hatcher and McCabe, they go to the murder scene, right? And they show the photographs to the local pornography dealer. That is Chuck Mitchell in the film. He identifies the photos as work of Kirk, because Kirk works for him. But he doesn't know that Kirk is committing murders. He's just like, oh, he's just making a quick buck, right? And so high quality photographs, right, of the pictures in the past is what Chuck, the porn dealer, has. And he gives the victim an address, right? So that way they can go to Kirk's house, confront him, right? But he's reluctant to do so, but you know, they do it anyway. And then so they go to this person, but before that they go to this is kind of, he's a toy maker, and so they won't go to the wrong house. and then so that happens, right? It's like, oh, you guys have the wrong house. And you know, the toilet's like, oh, I'm not the guy you want. So I don't know why they did that, but hey, I guess this for the you know, writers thought it would be funny, which kind of is. And the detective shirts search Smith's apartment. They find pictures of Dr. Gale, because he is, yep, Dr. Gale is his, yep, victim at this time, right? Yep. And they realize that, well, he's, like I said, that's his victim, right? Dr. Gale.
He's a little off, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so Kirk has Dr. Gale tied up, terrorizes her, right? Rants about his childhood.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
Yeah, you know, and he grabs his breath saying, you know, shut up or I'll tear your tit off. Very obscene threats here we have going on. Mm-hmm. But hey,
yeah, well, that was earlier in the movie. That was with that other, no, it was with Dr. Gale. You're right. My bad.
Yeah, Dr. Gale. Right. So he's, there are a lot of exposed breasts in this film too.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that happens. And so, you know, McCabe goes to Dr. Gale home just in time to rescue her. Right. And Kirk is there, right?
Of course. Yeah.
At it. Right. And so we have a scene here where there's a productive struggle between McCabe and Kirk many times, you know, a bit of a confrontation. I kind of remember that before, because I'd seen this before. And so, you know, that happens. And then he shoots Kirk several times in the back, right?
Yeah. yeah. And then he falls into the pool, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dark movie,
mm-hmm,
literally and figuratively, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kirk, you know, Kirk gets, obviously he's dead, mm-hmm, at the end of it. No chance of a sequel. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Maniac.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If this makes any sense, it has a deeper plot line than Maniac.
I would
Maniac,
say so.
Maniac has a deeper plot line. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think so too.
which I found funny because they both came out around the same time. It, yeah, I mean, that was like the genre thing, though. That was like the in horror movie thing, like, you know, the women in distress have to be rescued by a dude. That was the whole, you know, how can we see some boobs on the big screen? Have him rip her shirt off. All right.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the murders, I mean, the majority of them, he strangles them, but he does do stuff afterwards. And I mean, the acting's pretty bad.
Yeah.
A lot of it's pretty bad.
Nicholas Worth is probably the only one who, you know, he hams it up. I mean,
To be fair, he's so over the top. Like, you have to like almost enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, Chuck Mitchell's was in this, and he was a pornography dealer. I mentioned him because he was in Porky's.
I've seen The Hearse, which I'm a fan of. He's in that, and They Call Me Bruce.
They Call Me Bruce.
And Frightmare, I've seen. He's in that as well, which I've seen. Yeah. No, he's not bad in this. I mean, he's only got a few scenes.
Yeah.
Well,
he's like the only legit actor in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, the rest had some credits, but I mean, a lot, like we said earlier, it's weird. Three or four of them died like within 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's a strange movie. I don't know. It's almost like you let a kid just discovering girls make a movie. I can't decide if I thought it was enjoyable to watch or not. Because some parts of it are really that bad. Like,
I mean, I think the detectives are not like you said,
detective-y.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, it was like watching Cheech and Chong be detectives.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, apparently in LA, there are just hookers everywhere. Because everywhere he goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, really? So I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think I would own it. I mean, for many reasons, because if this is one of those movies you own, you better hope you have like a porn buddy, so when you die, they can raid your collection and take stuff like this out of it, so no one else finds it.
Yeah. Well, I had seen it because I think I bought it. I guess I enjoyed it more when I first saw it, but now it's like, I don't know, you know. But I bought it because at the time I was a fan of it, but you know,
the storyline of it's a solid story. It's just poorly written and poorly acted.
There's some problems with it for sure.
Yeah. I just don't know if what's left there is enough for me to be like, yes, watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after which reviewer, some reviewer flat out said, don't watch this. Oh, it was, Leonard Maltin gave the film a bomb rating, stating that it was another psychopathic Vietnam veteran killer film, warning readers not to watch the film. So I don't know.
I mean,
and like saying adios creep, it's like, really? It's just such a, like, that's the line you came up with.
Yeah.
Not he went for a swim. He's taking a bath. You know, something like that. You know, something more Schwarzeneggery. But I mean, I don't think it's as bad as a lot of the reviews said.
I mean, I don't think so either.
Now people are applauded for making low budget movies. Oh, it's so brave! Oh, look what they did with the budget. And you know, back then, or that people are like, oh, how dare they make a movie like this? And oh, I mean, I can't tell you if I've ever seen it on TV, to be honest. There's a TV cut of it. I know that.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if I've ever seen it like on Skinemax or Showtime or any of those.
Right. Right.
So I mean, if you want to see it, you're going to definitely have to buy it.
Well, it's on Plex too. But
is it really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. To be fair, it's not long. It's like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. What do you give it?
I mean, I give it 3 out of 5. know?
Yeah, you know what? You know what? I might go 2.5 out of 5.
Okay. Okay.
Because it's almost like the parts of it that are kind of gruesome are almost gruesome just to be gruesome.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Like,
you know, or like he kills every victim the same way. All right, he's a serial killer, you know, because once they figure out who it is, I mean, it doesn't even take long to figure out who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And once they do, the cops are on his tail. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say 2.5 stars. I think that's where I'll sit on it. So, because I don't want to say, I don't think it's like a 1-star movie.
No, I don't think so either.
I think it's. As a B movie horror movie, it's average in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's where I stand on it. I mean, the girls were nice to look at.
Yeah.
You know, there are some interesting lines of dialogue between them. But I think, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Well, I mean, not between the girls, but you know, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'd say if you're into that kind of movie, watch it.
I agree. Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I sit on it.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. You know. I mean, maybe I don't know. Like I said, it was taken off the market in the UK, so that means you should watch it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially for our UK listeners, right? I mean.
Hell yeah.
And we have some, right?
We do. And if you can get your hands on this, go for it. Well, I'm sure they know how. Yeah, like I said, it was interesting because, let's see, Ben Frank died at 56 in 1990, so 10 years after the movie. Nicholas Wirth, he lived to 2007. Denise Gallick, she's still alive.
I don't know if James Westmoreland died. And I think he outlived them all, or most of the actors. He died in 2016.
Yeah, Pamela Bryant died in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's weird that many actors from one movie are dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially a movie not that old.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We enjoyed bringing this to you and that.
Yeah,
I didn't mind doing the talking for a change, and you know, it's always I like doing that, and you know, but
I like throwing it your way once in a while, especially when it's a movie you've picked that you're passionate about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I like hearing you talk. Like a lot of times, I think I talk too much,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to balance that more. But yeah, when it's movies that you pick, I kind of like giving you more of the reins of it. Yeah, I think the fans like that too, because you know you always say "and James," and then you just like you laugh. Like no, James talks. Don't worry, he's there. He's just not a pretty face. But thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. We hope, but I'm sure you enjoyed it. And as we enjoyed bringing it to you.
Yeah. And stay tuned next time for, well, let's see what James got, what else James finds in his vault.
Yeah, we'll pick something. We'll figure it out.
You've been listening to a Squabble Box podcast.